Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do, and you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
Yo, yo, check this out. This is your girl, Cola Vogue, and I'm chilling with my boys right here on Off the Cuff Radio. We off the cuff right now. You dig?
What's up? It's your boy Lil Yap from UNLV, ragging up from the river, cooling with my homies and my family at Off the Cuff Radio. Y'all be sure to tune in on Fridays and get the latest scoop and find out what's happening. You hear me?
Tiffany
and this Queen Crazy, your girl, is a bartender.
And we're from
Sex on the Rocks podcast.
All right, you're now tuning in to Off the Cuff Radio.
Yeah, because they keep representing that world hip hop. Well, much love.
All right.
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irritation, and you're tuned in to Off the Cuff giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, y'all. This is Stacey Lachey giving a shout-out to King Eric and Off the Cuff Radio.
What's shaking, y'all? This is the Grand, one half of Lost Cause and one third of that Drive Time thing. Sending my love to the homies over at Off the Cuff Radio. Tune in every Friday night for some real deal hip-hop conversation. These dudes are the connoisseurs of this thing. You already know what it is. BX Stand Up, Hud City, was shaking. Peace.
Yo, this is Joe Fresh the Dime, and y'all tuned in to the most raw, untouched show on radio. The Guillotine Team, Off the Cuff, and yo, Eric Sandman, off of these clowns.
Merciless. You that type of nigga. You sell food 2 days a week, man. You got like one customer. The phone don't even ring, you know. You ain't in these streets, man, but you out here trying to pop. Nigga, get your chain popped. Get your phone robbed. You a weekend thug, you get no weekday love. You a OJ nigga, get stuck with the glove. Or should I say a jacket, you're not in my bracket. The wrist that works magic, your life is so tragic. You a halfway crook, fiends won't give a look. On the block and get shook, nigga just go home. Get robbed with 2 phones, you're not Kevin Gates. Kicking bitches in their faces, Supreme Louis laces. You weak, you need braces. Fingers on the hammer, shit, I'll give your faces. Real hustlers on deck, if we don't got it, yeah, that food is on set. My name's like the Ebola virus. I post up on your block like some flyers. The things that get higher, my goals, no longer desires. I went from flea market gear, now I rock designer. From rental, now soaps turn to buyer. Shit, I'm not a liar, don't fuck with the knots unless you want fire.
Popping while they baby these diapers. Real waste man lifers. Chasing designer fashion. Piece of shit life and cashing. Real is the new fake, fake is the new real. Wheel of liberty and trivial beat. Support hater blockers. Trigger figures, squeeze hater knockers. Chalk outliners, ghetto original designers. Time to put our foot down and run these clowns. Sick and tired of puppy dogs trying to act like hounds. Only on the ends on the weekend. Clout chasers with no ambition. Thugs, funny stories, live their life, which is straight plagiarism. Guess we'll see him on the weekend. Yo, so pass the ism. Pass that ism.
episode 401 of the Livest Hip Hop Show on Friday nights, Saturday nights, Sunday nights, whatever day. I'm your host, King Eric, and we have a special guest tonight, man. I'm proud to say that we reached episode 401. It's a milestone, and I got my host T-Mass with the facts in the building.
What it do, man. Another Friday night of Fantabulousness, Off the Cuff Radio. We are live and direct. Shout out to our co-hosts here, the Lot of Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. Man, we are sponsored by Core Financial, Jesse's Boutique, Buddy Boy Entertainment, and Dirty Basement Radio. We are Matt King. This is 401, man. Where's the time going?
And look, it just keeps going forward, man, because we are not only giving platforms to a lot of the legends that's, you know, looking for a second run, but we also giving light to those who are in the mission of really getting out there. And this is a special
show
right here because we going beyond the border, y'all. We going straight
Great
from
White North
Carolinas and Virginias to straight Canada. This talented group, they just gave us the single Weekend Thug. You just heard that. And they here to talk about that single, their new project, their come up, and where they're going forward in 2021. Let's all bring the usual suspects on the line, yo.
What's going on, yo?
Yo, what's up, what's up, what's up? What's going on?
What's going on,
with y'all,
man?
Guys?
Much love. Yes.
Yeah, man, I want to say, yo, it's big. You guys doing your 401st show. You know, we from the 401, that's our highway here in Toronto, so it's kind of like a good link, you know what I mean? You're on your 401st show. Our major highway out here is the 401, so it's all rhythm. It's supposed to be together today. Weekend Thug and Usual Suspects supposed to collide today with Off the Cuff Radio, man. It's just, it's supposed to be. It's written in the book, Destiny.
That's Destiny.
Man, look,
right,
we are, we are so honored. We are so privileged to have you on, you know, and we got to show love,
no,
of course,
you.
To Canada. Yeah, I mean, of course,
thank
shout
you
out
guys,
to Travis
man.
Bryant.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, you know, we got to shout out Travis Bryant too, who's also from Canada as well. You know, so we're pretty familiar, you know, with you know, going on with the hip hop scene up there. I mean, of course, you know, everybody knows about Drake being from up there. Y'all are gonna be the next to do it, but we can't forget about, of course, the sorority, Havaya Mighty. You know, and all the girls, of course, you can't forget Choc Clair, you know, some of the, you know what I'm saying, the pioneers of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is huge.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, things like I said, like during this whole pandemic, we were able to really, like, reach out and get our music out there to all different types of platforms, you know, sending out DJ packs and stuff like that and just connecting with the right people. And now all of a sudden, you know, our music is spinning on iHeartRadio and it's playing around the world and we're on interviews with guys like you guys, and it's like, you know what I mean? It's really taking off. Like, a year ago, you know, my partner, SK, he always said that Weekend Thug's going to bring us to the next level. But, you know, I was like, all right, cool, you know what I mean? But, like, honestly, it's been a good run so far, man, and I just want to thank everybody who's been supporting us and pushing the music and playing our music, you know what I mean? Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Definitely. And, you know, part of it with the show, guys, is that, you know, of course, you know, y'all represent U.S., Usual Suspects, while we represent, you know, United States. So it's us and us, you know. So
word
up. Look at all the connections here. One thing about it, man, is you all prove that hip-hop is indeed truly global. And we've had guests, you know, from Africa, you know, we've had guests from all over the world, whether they were from another continent or they're, you know, here, but they were, you know, their nationality, their heritage is from another country or nation.
Right.
I guess we get right into it, guys. I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came together, you know, the hip-hop scene in Canada. We got a couple hours. Let's get it. All
right, man. So the way me and Social Leo met was we met in a studio at a friend of ours, and Sos was working on one of his project things. What is it, the Don Deasley?
Don Deasley project.
The Don Deasley project, and I was working on a project called Fear, Forever Ageless Rhyming. And I had this track I was gonna do that day called 15 Cents. And my friend, which is a mutual friend of Sos, said to me that Sos could rap. I said, okay, cool. He said he's nice.
So when I got here and I met him, I said, I got two verses for this joint, but I'll take one off and jump on it. So he killed it, and that was the beginning of Usual Suspects.
I mean, and one thing about it, you know, you, of course, represented Canada. We've got to give a shout-out to the whole, you know, we got to give a shout-out to Toronto, Manitoba, Winnipeg, you And basically, in terms of it, as you all really progress, you know, from terms of, you know, of course, how you all met, who are your influences in terms of really who inspired both of you to rhyme in terms of, you know, when you really got into hip-hop? What was the impetus for where you knew this is what you wanted to do?
Well, for me personally, it's when my bro brought home, my big brother, he brought home African Bambaataa, Planet Rock. And the first time I heard that record play, I was like, yo, this is like, this is crazy, you know what I mean? Like, and then after when I seen the video, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, this is for me, you know what I mean? But what really took me, who I really embraced as an artist when I was growing up, where I really looked up to was Slick Rick. To me, Slick Rick embodies, embodies what a rapper is supposed to be, you know what I mean? You got the style, you got the fashion, but you're not forgetting about the roots, beatboxing, the b-boying. You know what I mean? The graffiti, you know what I mean? And it's just all, it's just a perfect package. And just the rhyme style and the way that he puts together his lyrics, Slick Rick, yeah, really brought me to a different level for real.
Yeah, for me, I think it was when LL Cool J and Crush Group ran up in the studio and performed Radio. He just forced his way in there. And it's like, that's how I feel sometimes with us in this, in the rap game, especially out here in Toronto. Because a lot of stuff happened back in the past in the streets and stuff, so you know, some intimidation has guys that really weren't about it, but they're in the industry having to wait, not be seen as stars, and now coming up now it's like I'm bullying my way now lyrically, something that they didn't really expect, so it's all good, you know.
It's just hard for brothers like us, because we're coming from the streets and we're doing this industry thing now. So a lot of the time people are just intimidated by just our general presence because of, you know, where we come from, or, you know, our background and stuff like that. But, you know, overall, we're all about business. At the end of the day, we conduct business the way that any 9-to-5 man or any corporate executive would take care of business. That's how we handle our music business. Same way, but it's just different in the industry because, like you know strong arming people on the street is different than strong arming people in the industry, you know what I mean? You may talk to somebody harsh and then all of a sudden now you blackballed, you know what I mean? So you gotta walk on eggshells in this business.
Definitely. And one thing about it, guys, is when we think about it in terms of it, because of course, you know, with hip-hop being an export from the United States that went all over the world, of course, there was also an intrinsic link between the street life and hip-hop culture, because that's where hip-hop culture was birthed from. A lot of people tell everybody about, in terms of, you know, from Canada, you know, from your side of the hood in terms of the streets, because we've heard stories about New York in terms of Brooklyn, Queens. We've heard about Houston and Texas. We've heard about L.A., specifically Compton, you know, Inglewood, you know, out in Oakland. What was the street life, you know, from what you all experienced coming up like in Toronto? Because everybody thinks usually of the Raptors, Drake, and the Argonauts. But there's more to it.
I'm going to be straight with y'all. A lot of y'all in the States think that Canada's sweet. Ain't nothing sweet about these streets out here. I'm from Montreal. So I'm from a gangster town. Rizzuto family, like Italian mafia.
So you said Rizzuto, and I know exactly who that is.
Exactly. So this is the town I'm from. Yeah. I'm from Montreal. I'm from a place called NDG. And so in my area, when crack hit in the 80s, it was like how crack hit in New York City, right? Because we're only a few hours away from New York City. So Montreal is the hub. At this time, Montreal was Toronto. Montreal was bigger than Toronto. Montreal known as the party city in all of Canada. Like, that's where you come to get your designers. You come to get your you want things, you come to Montreal. You know what I mean? But, like, Montreal's a very gangster town. So, at the same time, growing up in Montreal, you know, you have the French and English. Then you have all type of little wars in between that. Like, us being West Indian dudes, you know what I'm saying? It's like, we stick to our own side in our area. But there's many wars going on in that area, especially when crack hit. You know what I mean? The streets was wild. Like, heads were getting bust every day. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like you walk outside and see a man in the morning. Nighttime, he's yellow tape. You know what I mean? Like, it was like that growing up in Montreal in the early, in like the 80s and 90s. You know what I mean? Like, it's still kind of wild out there right now. But for my generation, it's gangsters, Rizzuto family, all Italian mob run. And, like, I'm talking about from, you know, the premier, meaning, like, the governor, going straight down to, like, the 9-to-5 man. Everybody has involved.
That they remember, you guys also have the bikers.
And we have the bikers, too, the Hells Angels and all that shit. So Montreal's a very gangster town. It's very gangster. It's Las Vegas. It's Atlantic City. It's to that degree. You have every shape, form of hustling that you see in Detroit, that you see in L.A., that you see in Compton. Everything that happens there happens in Montreal. But I'm going to let my man tell you about growing up in Toronto.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Toronto is like a scene where, like, when the crack epidemic hit here, it hit hard, too. You know, like, certain blocks was, like, really pumped. You had Jane and Fitch.
Million-dollar blocks, man. You had million-dollar blocks.
You had, like, Jane and Fitch. That was, like, crazy out there. They have, like, many spots up in there. You have Shoreham. You have Connections. You have down, you go down more. You have Chichewa and Black Creek. You know, Western Road. You have Hardwick over Islington. And over there, is like, those spots is hot. But I'm from, like, a place in Toronto called Scarborough. And our areas, our spots are hot, too. Like, I come from a block named Markham and Eglinton. All those other areas, they call my block the million-dollar block, because at any time or any time of the day and any day, you can get whatever you want out there. You got guys just serving, like, just nonstop in generations and generations. And I just grew up around it, more Jamaicans and Trinidadian and Guyanese mainly. You got a lot of Spanish cats up there. We had gangs like the Boys in Blue and stuff. A lot of work, a lot of shots, but right now in Toronto's nuts. Every day there's a shooting. Like, it ain't slowing down. And now they open up the doors a little bit. Like, these guys' guns came out of quarantine, too. Shots are just firing. This place is ringing. Like, so when people think about Toronto, they're like, oh, yeah. But some of the biggest rappers from the States came to Toronto, and they're robbed. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So this place is not this ain't no lickety-split place. You come and go buy a banana split and you can go pump the guy over in the corner there. Nah, you're going to get your food jam around here.
Yeah, especially for dudes coming across the border, like Americans and stuff like that. Because they know, like, these kids out here know that you guys don't have nothing out here. You guys don't have access to certain things that they'll have access to. So these kids, they ain't afraid to yap you anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, so it's just, like I say, we tell artists all the time, when you're coming down here, leave your jewelry at home. Don't come to Toronto flossing. You will get robbed.
And this is not
and
a flossing town at all.
That's real talk.
They just act like they're flossing, but it's because certain people are not road. There's certain crews back in the day, they catch guys flossing in that club.
Everything.
And next week, by next week, they got to pay. That's what extorting you. Tying you up. Taking a family member and running ransom and all that. So right now,
and it's real.
A little free up. That's why it's so wild right here.
Right. And, you know, it's real because also, definitely. And, you know, guys, also, too, one of the premises we've done with this show is also wrestling. And, you know, in terms of everything you all said, it's absolutely real. You know, of course, you all mentioned Vito Rizzuto, but there's also another boss in Montreal by the name of Vic Catroni. This also had to do with the situation, of course, with the unfortunate death of the former wrestler Dino Bravo, who was his nephew.
Yeah, Dino Bravo.
Yeah, you know. And
you remember Montreal's heavily tied into wrestling as well, right? You have like the Green Machine. You had many Rush. You had many, many wrestlers out of Montreal.
They had Rick Martel.
You had a lot of wrestlers out of Montreal. And again, a lot of those guys were enforcers. A lot of guys were enforcers for the mob too.
Oh wow. But I mean, we definitely. I mean, but when you think about the correlation, because the history, y'all, between hip hop, you know, gangster culture, you know, and of course wrestling. Of course, we can't forget about, of course, Bret. Of course, the matriarch, you know, the patriarch Stu Hart, the patriarch of the Hart family.
Yeah, man.
Calgary Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah, man. And that's Bret and Owen's father, man. How you mean, man? That guy would still put people in a figure four and break their legs.
Yeah. You know,
the Hart family does it, man. You can make it out of there, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah, man. I mean, so what was it like for what was it like for y'all in Canada when hip hop really became big in terms of when the scene really? What was it like for the scene to really start coming up in terms of back in the day when you really started seeing guys take it seriously? Because of course you know there's Chuck Clare, but I know it's not. It didn't start with him.
Well,
so
coming from my
early,
era. Coming from my era in Montreal, like I grew up around MCs like Chuck Ice and older guys like, you know, like Submatique, they have gold plaques. Like I'm from a crew that have like a bag of plaques. You know what I mean? So it's like we put in our work. Like hip hop, as long as hip hop been alive, we've been getting it in Montreal. There was a point that we would get the hip hop before Toronto would get it because we're so close to New York. You know what I mean? Like, so we would get a lot of more vibes. Like, but when it all happened, like, in, like, 1991, 92, there was a big referendum, like, a big struggle between power between the province of Quebec and the rest of Canada. Quebec is a French province, so they only speak French there. That's the primary language over there.
And they wanted to separate.
They wanted to separate from Canada. So when the big businesses heard about that, all the big businesses, the top 500 Ford companies, came to Toronto and brought the residents of Toronto. And then in the 90s, that's when Toronto really started to boom with business and a lot of top 500 Ford companies came to Toronto where their head companies were in Montreal. But because of this political shift and uncertainty, a lot of them left and came to Toronto. So this is how Toronto became the state that it's in right now. But remember, before all of this happened, it was Montreal that was carrying pretty much the swing of being the party city and everything like that. But going back to your question, hip-hop has always, as long as hip-hop's been alive in New York City, it's been alive in Montreal, it's been alive in Toronto. Especially Toronto and Montreal, because that's where you have the most West Indian-based people. And again, going back further, you said that hip-hop started in New York. Hip-hop did not start in New York. Hip-hop started in Jamaica. In the dance hall, DJ Kool Herc brought that style to New York City, and then that's when rappers started to pick that up on the corner. So all of this started in Jamaica with the rapping over the beats and over instrumentals and cutting up instrumentals. That was going on in Jamaica from in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s.
That's when you got the tribe coming out of that, right?
So that hip hop was birthed out of dance hall music.
That's how maybe ska, rock, reggae. Yeah.
But when hip hop got birthed into a major stream, it was CBCG. When hip hop was Planet Rock doing shows with Izzy, with those guys, all the punk bands.
Yeah, they were doing it all the punk bands.
Because punk was the outside, and so was hip hop, right? And now look, punk has turned to alternative. Your Kurt Cobain's and all this and that. They're number one. That hardcore rock shit don't sell no more. Nobody ain't listening to no heavy metal.
They got their fans.
But I'm just saying, it's not as big as it was prior to their saying that hip-hop was gonna be a five-year thing.
Well,
like
you got to understand, though, too, to white America, too, you know, hip-hop and the black culture is like the new fad. Before this, you know what I'm saying? So in regards to the young kids, don't get it wrong. There's a lot of racism going on up there, same way. It's always on the TV. But at the end of the day, they'd kill us off to take our culture.
Thanks.
You know what I mean? Like in Toronto, the Toronto scene we had before Drake, we had people like Mishy Me, who was on who was in the video with Queen Latifah, Ladies First.
Maestro Fresh
West. Yeah, Maestro Fresh West. You know, a crew that came up from my corner at Markham and Eglinton, big up my ends, straight, was a crew called T-Vice, a Brethren Flippy and an ex-man named Danny. One time, Bismarck Key came to Toronto, and they had a beatbox battle in concert hall. And Danny and Flippy, known as T-Vice, ate Bismarck Key's food because they ended up keeping Bismarck Key a reggae rhythm. And the place went crazy. And you're thinking now, you're in this big place. You got like 50 dudes from Markham and Eglinton in there. You got all these other Scarborough areas, West End and all that. And them days, they used to back each other when it was Toronto versus anybody from America. Right? So, of course, they had the crowd, but black people are wagging this too. So, yo, Bismarck is here, enough of them are going to jump on his side and tell B-Bites they can't win anyway. So I guess they shocked the crowd. But, yeah, I grew up under that. So I have a big dancehall influence too because I have some friends and stuff that, one of my friends had a big reggae, two big reggae tunes in the 80s. One was called Wide and a Miss, and the next one was called Horsehair. So I've been around the music scene a good minute, you know. It's just that being so society, so let's just jump into this last lap, see how long we can do it for. Y'all's pushing.
It's doing really well.
And now we're here, Ron. We're with you guys right now.
Off the Cuff Radio. Big up.
And I got to say thanks for having us on the show.
Definitely.
And,
you know,
and that's what we all, that's what the beautiful thing about our show is, like, we get to hear stories of different cultures and different lands, because what you guys are talking about here, a lot of people wouldn't have known about with Canada. They would probably just think it's just about hockey and wrestling, but you can't go out there thinking you're going to run the town. They're going to run you out the town.
Oh, yeah, you're probably not even going to make it out of town. You make it to the morgue.
Toronto's a place, if you're out from outside of it, and even like how our areas roll, like if you don't know the culture of this end, and you go over there thinking everything's cool, we're watching you go to jail. You know what I mean? Because you don't know how the place moves, really.
Yeah, Toronto's a different place.
So every spot is different.
Yeah,
like every
moves
spot
different.
Moves different, you know? That's the greatest about it, but certain spots leak same way and certain spots just don't agree. That's just how street life is, though, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely. And, you know, one thing about it, and we want to backtrack a little bit because when you look at the history of hip-hop, because you're absolutely right in terms of what you said about Jamaica is the motherland in terms of the rhythm, you know, as we call them the islands, the rhythm, you know, to actually be the set.
Right.
Now, of course, DJ Kool Herc, because this is we have to break down, because for our listeners, we have to give them, and you all just brought it to the forefront, we have to break it down in terms of the iterations of where it started, of course, with the rhythms in Jamaica. DJ Kool Herc, because everybody looks at it as synonymous, which it is, but it has different incarnations in terms of how it evolved. From Jamaica to DJ Kool Herc, which is he's the pioneer of the two turntable technique, which he's also native Jamaican. And then when you break it down to the 80s with Afrika Bambaataa, he is the one that coined the term hip-hop for hip, staying in terms of what's going on currently and hop moving forward. So these are the three elements, you know, and
correct.
In between,
correct.
you have the five, you have the four elements.
And then you have
DJ,
then you have graffiti, and then you have MC. So those are the five elements of hip-hop right there.
Yeah, uh-huh. Exactly. And one thing about
so
it, too,
is
also
we try to keep
people,
that balanced in our work.
Right. And one thing is, in terms of the rich musical tradition that you all have in Canada, it's not limited to just hip-hop. I mean, of course, you know, Deborah Cox is from Canada. You know, of course, Tamia. You have the late, great Jeff Healey, one of the baddest guitarists ever. Of course, Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
And then you got
one
of the most sexiest women on the planet, Vanity. Vanity comes from Niagara Falls.
I cannot forget Denise Matthews, rest in peace. Oh, yes. Who?
Bang, bang. Yes, let's call her by her real name, Denise Matthews. Pick up Denise Matthews.
Yes.
She comes from Niagara Falls. Yeah.
Yeah, she was one of the baddest to ever do it.
Yo, man, I remember when I first seen her in that first movie, was it the Last Dragon?
Yeah.
Damn, boy, I fell in love. And then after when I seen Apollonia, I was like, God damn, I don't know who to choose.
Man, I tell you, those were Apollonia and Vanity, hands down. And you got to think, which is a testament to the late great Prince's playerisms, because he had both of them. I'm like,
oh, I know.
Again, what,
I'm gonna tell you something, mate. I'm gonna tell you something. You may not know. You know when Prince met Vanity, do you know who he met her to? Rick James.
Oh.
Prince bumped Vanity from Rick James. Awesome, Tim.
That's
Jim.
Why. Now y'all can answer this question.
He bumped her
because
Rick James, and that's why Rick James and Prince never talked after that meeting there.
Okay.
Because Rick James wanted her to be the lead singer for the Mary Jane Girls, but when Prince seen her, he's like, "Yo, Vanity Six," but he first wanted to call her Vagina Six. Prince bought my dad, you know what I mean? Prince bought my dad. Well, yeah, man, I'm just showing you just a little background from a background. I'm telling you, man, like, for real talk, like, Prince bumped her from Rick James. That's why Prince and Rick James never got along, because back and forth, they were just trying to bump each other's chicks.
Well, women create words,
but you got to
remember, those
two
guys are geniuses.
Should have known it had to be about a woman.
Yeah.
Should have known it was a woman.
But you know, guys, I'd always heard that story about Rick in terms of when he would always try to shade Prince, because he always tried to say Prince wasn't as good as everybody said he was or as he thought he was. And I never really understood it, because I just looked at it from a perspective, because you figure Rick was already around in the early 70s, and, you know, Prince came along in the late 70s, you know, so
yeah,
Prince was like that in this way.
Right, and Rick James was doing his thing from what, 74, 75?
Little Red Corvette. That joint was in 79.
No, Little Red Corvette's in 80.
No, that was in 80. That was
Little
that
Red
was
Corvette?
80, yeah, that was like 80.
That's like
84,
85. Wasn't that his first joint?
Yeah, I think that was off
no,
Sign of the
no.
Times, I believe.
She wrote that. Prince
King, was
that
off 1999 or Sign of the Times?
Yeah. I think
Prince
that was around Sign of the Times, I think.
Yeah, I think that was one of the times, I believe, was 85.
Yeah,
I think that was 85.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I stand corrected.
Yeah, but yeah.
He was just about a woman, man. I mean, I was like, it had to be something for him to cause that rift. I'm like, look, if women could break up the mega power, you know it's going to break up Rick and Prince.
I'm telling you, them brothers never liked each other from the beginning. Cause you remember, your boy Rick, he from Detroit, he from the D, so he moving different. You know what I'm saying? Like, and Prince, just because Prince was wearing them blouses and shit, don't think that Prince wouldn't bust your ass in some basketball or kick your ass. That dude could fight.
Yeah, but when you were in high heels,
those,
you must be able to fight.
You know, all those stories that Charlie Murphy told on Dave Chappelle's show. It's real stories, man. Those are not fake stories. Those are actual, factual stories.
Yeah. And, you know, I heard the story from Prince's former basketball coach in high school where he talked about Prince. He's like, y'all don't understand. Like, that dude really could have gone pro if he wanted.
Yeah,
you know,
Prince could ball, man.
Yeah, they was like, he was like,
ball,
he was pretty good. You know, and of course, you know, Rick, you know, and I...
After Purple Rain, I never underestimated Prince, because the way he had all them bad bees up in that movie, come on, man. I never seen Prince with an ugly girl in my life.
Kind of hard, huh? Prince too pretty to be rocking with an ugly chick.
I understand, man. I never seen
an
ugly girl in that guy's presence.
And you know you got to be cold for her. You know Prince had to be cold for to make Apollonia jump in that cold-ass lake.
She was just trying to get her shine. She would have jumped in sewer water if she had to. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man.
Like
1984, you were the biggest artist in the world, and you're doing a movie? And that movie's a classic right now. She never did a movie after that.
You don't need to when you have a classic like that. You're going to get paid.
No doubt. Well, hopefully she get some residuals, because you know Prince, how he works.
Hey, man.
That's how that record is a mastermind when it comes to that money.
That's how the industry was back in those days.
You know, but you know, guys, in terms of course, and a polite note, because, of course, Rick James is from Buffalo, you know, born and raised. But when you look at the genius that they both had, you look at Rick James from what he did and, you know, where Prince, because we never really heard anything about Prince getting into anything from a perspective of, like, drugs and all of that that we knew of. But we know with Rick, unfortunately, you know, how his career spiraled out of control because Rick was just, you know,
Rick was a cocaine cowboy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow,
yeah.
Son. Y'all
doing some crazy shit.
Yeah.
He hit that white heart. That white lady beat him bad.
Well, that's the time they were even smoking crack. They were freebasing before they got to the crack. You know what I'm saying? So when they got cracked, it was like, oh, my God, fuck freebase.
Yeah.
Like I said.
Man, I remember that.
Me personally, they're both geniuses in their own ways. But, you know, again, you know, coming from the times that they're coming from where it was formidable to do certain things. And, come on, look at Richard Pryor. Like, you know, that was the 80s, man. You know, crack at, you know, freebasing. Dudes were, like, freebasing in clubs like they were drinking beer.
Was checking his dealer for a key.
For a key. Richard Pryor is buying key to smoke, bro. Come on.
Well, in terms of the music coming out of that era, in terms of hip-hop, because, of course, you know, you had the song White Lines, you know, you had, of course, you know, Crack It Up. You know, what
the message.
You, and obviously, you two are scholars at this shit. We're pretty damn good at what we do, and you guys are just phenomenal with it. I mean, what is y'all observations of what the music scene was like in the 80s in terms of when we start, in terms of that mix, that combustible mix of sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
It was all about the art, man. Like, you know, like we were, at that time, the hip-hop was about the MC, and it was about the dancers, it was about the DJ. And remember, the DJ was the most important part of that before the MC, because if your DJ couldn't cut and scratch and put that mix down right, your whole set was thrown off anyway. You know, so your DJ had to be on point before your lyrics were on point, you know, because some guys, you know, that's why you have certain MCs from there and that era come up, and you hear some of the God MCs now talk like, yo, when I first heard this, I heard Melly Mel, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was just crazy. Like, when you heard the flipping, It's just a jungle to time. That's making wonder why I keep from going under. It's like, yo, man, when you heard the message, I was like, damn, man. I remember these guys were, you were wearing them leather suits when you're standing on the corner hustling in those leather cowboy boots, you know. MCs and that, they had an entertainment effect on them now, right? Where now everybody just wants to look grimy up there, you know. So that
was definitely.
Growing up in that, it's like you learn to entertain. Like, if you want to be a good MC in this game, you've got to pay attention to how those guys did their performances and that. Because the real top performers is like Busta Rhymes and all these guys. They're taking stuff from those guys. They're taking stuff from the reggae artists that he picked up from the stage shows, you know, and he's watching all the how everybody does it, you know. Whereas now you got somebody just standing in the corner, they're rapping. It's like, yo, why don't you just give that guy a chair and a glass, roll him a blunt, and let him spit two bars while he's sitting down. And he's not really rapping for the crowd. He's just chilling, rapping to himself.
Hmm. I mean, it's definitely a different time out there in terms of what it is now and what it was then. Because when you're looking at it, because you got to think about it, guys. You know, when we're looking at hip-hop, it went through so many different elements of, you know, of course, even if we take it back further, of course, the music itself, but when you look at the guys like James Brown and even Johnny Cash to a degree in terms of their rhyme cadences, I mean, I tell anybody, they say, with Johnny Cash hip-hop, you crazy. I'm like, no, you ain't listening to Folsom County Blues. And
you
you're kind
Johnny
of,
Cash. Johnny Cash is a rapper.
Yeah.
We'll get it twisted.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Right, right. But when you also get it, but when you get into it, of course, with James Brown, in terms of, you know, how he would lay down the rhythms with the band and the breakbeats, you know, that would be like setting it up for
Godfather of the breakbeat, man. Godfather of the breakbeat.
Yeah. Him and the JBs, you know.
Oh, yeah. If it wasn't for James Brown, you wouldn't hear half of the music that we have out. You wouldn't hear half of the music in the 80s that we came out with. If everybody was sampling James Brown. Everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's the go-to guy, man. The go-to guy, man. You know what I mean? Like, that's the essence of hip-hop, right? It's like taking something and recreating something and making it better. Making your own wheel from it. You know what I mean? And this is how we approach our music. Like, you know, we don't try to fix the wheel. The wheel's already working, you know what I mean? But we try to make the wheel a little bit more efficient that you won't have to pedal so hard on the bike, you know what I mean? So we just try to use the old school ways with the new school ways to make our own way, you know? But we never turn our back or close our eyes or shun the old school ways, because if it wasn't for the old school ways, we wouldn't be on your show right now.
Definitely. And one thing about it is what you all have done in terms of it, because you all show an academia, being the artist that you are, that is not, I'm not going to say not common, because that would disrespect a lot of the artists out there, but it shows you all have a true love and appreciation for the culture, where you've taken the time to study the nuance, the roots, you know, everything that encompasses hip-hop culture, from lyrics to stage presence to the beginnings, and understanding the history of past and present, you know, to now. I mean, this is something that, you know, King and myself, you know, of course, with our co-host, Sam and Chinchilla, we've interviewed so many guests, and we always lament a lot of times, not because we're angry old people, but it's because it seems like a lot of artists don't seem to appreciate or know the history of who came before them in terms of really understanding what this culture is supposed to represent. And it's so refreshing, it's absolutely exhilarating to know you all are keeping tradition alive in such a grand and honorable fashion. You know,
oh,
this
for
is
sure.
Something,
like,
yes.
We want to keep learning alive. You know what I mean? We want to keep the DJ on board. You know what I mean? We want to include graffiti artists into our work, b-boy, you know what I mean, break dancing. You know what I mean? All the elements of hip-hop. Like, I let me tell you something, man. You know, me being a West Indian, like, you know, with reggae and soca and calypso and all that playing in my house, I used to love Sundays, because on Sunday, my dad would put on nothing but soul music. Nothing but soul music from 7 in the morning till 5 p.m. We're listening to nothing but Temptations, Equatics. We're listening to all them joints. We're listening to real joints. And it's like, you know, I want to thank my father for really blessing me with music in my life, you know what I mean? Like, and really, like, you know, letting me explore his vinyl collection. And, you know what I mean? Like these are the things I cherish. And I always said to myself, you know, if this game ever took me to the level that I want to be at, I'm never going to forget the past. You know what I'm saying? I'm always going to make people remember, like, where we came from and, you know what I mean, well, how this music inspired us to keep our music relevant right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, you would do. Now I want to ask you guys, too. Now, are you guys also in the battle culture? Like, you know, the battle in hip-hop culture?
Oh,
like
URL and stuff? Oh, man, I like watching URL. I like watching the battle culture, for sure. You know what I mean? For me to say, like, to me personally, like, the greatest battle to me of all time is probably Loaded Lux and Calico. Like, when Loaded Lux went on his second verse and told the man about his father, like, yo, your father wasn't a real gangster. Your father was just an average nigga. You know what I mean? When he broke it down, like, to me, Loaded Lux is probably one of my favorite battle rappers.
Murder Mook's got,
and then Murder Mook. I like Murder Mook too, you know what I mean? But to me, Lux has a way of just hurting people's feelings, like, you know what I mean? Like,
he has a lot of intelligent bars, you know what I'm saying?
Lux is intelligent.
He has a lot of intelligent bars. He uses a lot of his vocab very well.
Yeah, we don't battle rap out here.
To be honest with you, man, I'm old school when it comes to battling, man. I can't do this Google battle rap nonsense, to be honest with you, man.
I give those guys all the kudos for what they're doing because, first of all, it takes bravery to battle our next guy face-to-face
right.
on a stage. You know what I mean? So that's emceeing regardless of it.
Yeah, but you know
I more like, you know, the more wittiness of, like, showing the creativity of you, like, giving an on-spot diss, you know what I mean, face-to-face. I don't want you Googling me and getting all stuff. I find some of the battles that on Smack and all that stuff gets a little too personal. And some of the stuff that comes out, ain't nobody know that about somebody. They don't need to know that about that, you know. Just kill them with bars. You don't have to kill them with, like, it's humility. Sometimes
they humiliate
each other. Guys
are talking about their guns and this and that. Like,
yeah, but, you know,
there's
other ways to do it, though. Other ways to do it. But
at the end of the day, like, yo, when Ice Cube dropped No Vaseline,
ain't telling nobody shooting anybody.
No, no, true. What I'm saying is, like, you know what I mean? It's like, to me, it's what SK says. Like, it doesn't seem that they're coming off of the top of the head. Like, a man like Supernatural. I remember looking at
Supernatural.
I remember watching Supernatural at a KRS-One show. And, like, the way he just went in and bar for bar, like, he was a great freestyle rapper. But to me, this is not freestyle on the URL. These are written bars to adapt to battle another MC. When we're coming up
right.
with freestyling and battling, when you're at the club and you're battling somebody, it was all off of the top of your head, you know what I mean, on the spot kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? You had to be witty with your bars and witty with your wordplay and metaphors. You know what I mean? That's a real MC. A lot of these URL guys, a lot of these battle rap, the new battle rap rappers, they can't write a song for their life.
Hey, man, but they're making it in the URL and they're battling. It's good entertainment at the end of the day. And, yo, some of the bars, even they're written, like, to be honest with you, some of the things I hit, like, I hear some bars sometimes, I'm like, and I see the crowd not, like, paying attention to it. I'm like, wow, that really went over their
head. A lot of times them bars go over their head.
Sometimes these guys say some real shit, man, and it just flies over the head of the crowd. And I'm like, yo, these battles are usually backpacker dudes that are like diehard hip-hop fans that are at meetings.
Right.
So you're going there to take in bars. Ain't no bars supposed to fly over the crowd's head. Like, gun fingers, everything, lighters, whatever. Cell phone lights, everything's like bars are going down. Like, there's supposed to be noise nonstop through the URL on those battles. And sometimes I see these guys, and the MCs, cool to the MCs, because even if they don't get no applause or no big up from the crowd, they don't stop. You know, they keep the show going. I applaud them still. I'm just not too big on how they Google each other, but they take their time, and they invest their time into their craft. So you can never not
respect them. I respect them.
Yeah, and you know,
I like how they
guys.
I like how they up the showmanship too as well. I remember when Lux, he came through with the suit and the
casket.
He's like, you bury somebody.
100%. Was great. And then he had Calico on screen, Skinny Dipping with the girls. Yo. That was a crazy battle, I'm telling you. Like, one of my favorite battles. I watched that battle at least 5-6 times.
You like Iron Toast too much, man.
Yeah, I do still. You know me.
You know,
but you know,
and you know
when you talk about that, you brought the casket on stage, you know. I remember Ninja Man did that at Sting for Mad Cobra.
For Mad Cobra, yeah, I remember that too.
it's crazy the similarities.
Let me tell you something. Ninja Man
comes back.
Ninja Man
like
was probably one of the best battle artists in Jamaica dancehall history. Like, I don't think any MC wants to battle Ninja Man. Vibes Cartel, none of them want to part with Ninja Man because
I don't even know if too many rap MCs want to battle that.
Yeah, that guy's mad. And you know our producer DJ Merciless. He has a song with Ninja Man and Junior Krat and Junior Cat, like
it's called Apocalypse.
Yeah, Apocalypse. Like,
it's got Planet Asia from the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
He's in it too. Styles P, Capadonna, Sheik Looch, Aeson Eastwood, who's part of Supreme Jeans, which is the record label that we're a part of, and Lord Fury. And DJ Merciless has a real good resume though. Worked with Styles P, Ghostface Killer,
Conway, Benny the Butcher,
Aguila, Sean Price,
Capadonna, Killer Priest.
You got Killer Priest.
Lots. Sheik Luke. Yeah, you got Sheik, right?
Yeah.
Jada, all of
them. He's got a nice resume.
And one thing about it, guys, is... Go ahead.
I was just saying we're fortunate to have him as a producer.
And one thing about it, with that level of pedigree that he has in terms of who he's worked with, combined with the incredible talent that you have, both of you have, on top of the knowledge, you know, when we look at the hip-hop game today, because when we talk about the battling like King had brought up, you know, we look at it from the 90s because we're both older, so we kind of remember back in the day when the 90s, you know, with the, you know, like you said, when we look at the lyricism from that time, and of course social media wasn't around during that era,
exactly.
Weather battles, you know, so we're seeing a difference now, because when we looked at the music at that particular time, we look at albums from the 80s to the 90s, and we're just naming them off in order, whether Bigger and Deafer, Reasonable Doubt, Illmatic, Straight Outta Compton,
yeah.
Soul on Ice, you know, The Sun Rises in the East, you know, Operation Doomsday, you know, The Low End Theory, you know, Instinctive Travels in the Path of Rhythm, you know, Death Certificate.
Yeah, man, you're bringing it back, man. Holy.
Boy, that
library you know,
sounding sweet right now, man. I'm telling you, that's our era. We came up in that era, too.
Don't smoke crack and weed in that, and liquor and a bottle of Only on the ground.
We came up in that era, too, man. They get into crates.
Real, man. You just named gems right there. Like, you know, we're coming from that same era, right? We're coming from hard body music, right? Real lyricism. Like,
I remember, like, my homies that I hang out with, those guys are like, they only listen to West Coast music, man.
Word up.
Those guys are, they love their E-40, Mac Dre.
A man made a reference to me the other day, said that I sound like Mac 10.
Open the barrel, stand up. Romper, yes.
You know, man, they listen to Chew Some. I can't remember the man. Jay Diggs, all those cats, man. Those are my homies listen to. We always have pure arguments over MCs, you know? All the time. Because, you know, I'm more of an East Coast listener. You know? But, like, Yup Mouth, I think Yup Mouth's a dope MC, man. From the Loonies, man. I like Yup, man.
You know what?
One of my favorite Yup Mouth lines is, blood on my wallabies when Robin screams. What?
You know, but you all are reading our minds.
Yeah, Yup McGinnis.
You all are reading our minds. Yeah, because you know we interviewed Jay Hood last night, and he talked about Yup Mouth in such glowing fashion. You know,
yeah,
so.
Yup Mouth's a monster, man. He doesn't get the credit he deserves.
We're gonna have to get Yup Mouth on the show, man, because we're getting like
a lot of love
for him.
Yeah, you gotta give that guy some love, man. Trust me, it's my homies put me on it. My ringtone is I got five on it. And it's a ringtone for like 3 years now on my phone.
Yeah, you know,
that's
that
sign right there. That's the bat signal right there. Like he gonna be on here soon than y'all think.
All right, man.
You know. But this is like, this show is like just such a confluence of greatness in terms of just coincidental conversations that are happenstance. You know, we didn't know, because like I said, we interviewed Jay Hood last night, and he talked about, you know, his Pesci 3 album and, you know, the stuff he had done with Yuck Mouth. And we are interviewing y'all, and, you know, y'all in Canada, and y'all just happen to bring up Yuck Mouth. It's a sign, you know
what I'm saying? Yeah, man. Yuck Mouth is
just You got to holler at the big man. Let him know that guys in Toronto, you give him his props, man.
You know what I mean? Like, yo, music is music, man. Good music is going to bump. And we some street dudes, right? So we're going to pay attention to the streets, man, no matter where it is. Politics are politics around the world, right? And once you win the game, you don't want to look the politics around the other side of the court when you know what I mean? When it comes up to you facing that team, right? So at the end of the day, man, music is like the newspaper of your hood. So if you're a great MC, you'll be able to write a proper story about your hood. So 50 years from now, if somebody wanted to know about where you were from, they just have to listen to your music and they'll be able to pull up and feel the vibe and almost feel like they're walking in your shoes if you're a great MC. You know what I mean?
Definitely. What do you think the game... where do you think the game started changing in terms of where the content is, where it was lyrically oriented, to where we have now a lot of theatrics that are not really predicated in talent, but more about exaggeration and sensationalism? Where do you all think the game changed?
So let's just bring it down, break it down to generations now, right? So X, being our generation, have a longer attention span. This is a generation that went to the record store on Tuesday when new releases came out. This is when you bought your tape or your cassette. You read all the credits. You want to know who produced it, who were on the thank yous, stuff like that. When you had to go study, you had to go to the library, to go to encyclopedias and look up information. Let's move forward now. Millennial generation. Mm-hmm. That's the information generation. So they could type up their stuff. They never had to go to a library to go study. They could ask Google the question and get the answers. You understand? So now going into Generation Z, which is even more lazier than the millennial generation, because now all their answers are on the computer. They can't remember seven numbers if it was on their life. They don't know how to talk to women because they're afraid of women. All they can do is swipe left because they don't have any personal interpersonal skills to speak. So what they do is repeat. So the music now has gone down in the sense that I have to repeat what I say. I'm going to text. So I'll say three formidable bars and then repeat another 11 or 12 bars of the same line.
Or emojis.
Or do emojis because I can't talk. You know what I mean? So bringing it back to our generation. Our generation was about showmanship. Was about, I know I can. And I am better than. And I can do this. The next generation is like, you know what? I'm going to sleep on that. These guys work too hard. I'm going to find a way to work easier than these guys. And then the generation that followed them, it's like, I'm not working at all. These people owe me money for shit that I ain't even done yet. You understand what I'm saying? So this is how the music breaks down. So now you're coming from...
Everywhere you go.
You're coming from Generation X, X-Clan, Public Enemy, Eric B. and Rakim, Slick Rick the Ruler. You're getting knowledge. You're getting knowledge as you're listening to the music. Going into the Wu-Tang, going into Boot Camp Clip, going into all of that. You're getting knowledge as you listen to the music. West Coast, same thing. E-40, Mac and Dre, same thing, right? Death Row, giving you the streets. So now you move to the next generation. What came after that? You had your Kendrick Lamar's. Kendrick Lamar's the only real conscious one out of all of them, right? So the music is breaking down because they don't have the OGs in their corner schooling them at the same time. When we were coming up, you couldn't go on the block if you didn't know anybody and try to sell drugs. You'll get you'll get dummied. But these kids nowadays, they don't go through the procedures that we went through. You couldn't just be somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, now there's no ethics to that, right? It's dog eat dog. It's this is why their business always fails. This is why you got guys like Tekashi who are still selling millions of albums, and you are.
Tekashi's a police.
You're known as a police. You're a fucking rat. So how does all of a sudden in a culture that we don't tolerate this and this and that, this shit is tolerated now? So just now y'all tell me, you know what I mean? It is.
Yeah,
I was going to say something, but I had to just refrain from what I'm saying.
These guys are 9/11 subs, man.
Everybody call the 911 when they get hurt. I just don't believe it. I love some of the young kids. Don't get me twisted, man. I like Lil Durk. You know what I mean? I like some of the young boys then. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But like on a real level, we just stay in our lane because when it comes to the consumer now, people who buy records and buy downloads and stream your music are people from our generation. They want substance right now because they're not getting the substance. They have to go back to 90s music and 2000 music to feel like they're getting a little bit of a party vibe. If all of us went to a party right now and they played nothing but Tekashi and Pop Smoke, we'll probably leave in a half an hour.
Right.
Yeah, uh-huh. Because that's not our thing. You know what I mean?
That's not our thing. You know what I mean? And just the drug influence. We come up from a generation where we said no to drugs. This generation is all about, let's give me more drugs.
A generation that was selling drugs. These guys are big enough being the cousin.
Reagan era, say no to drugs. This generation, it's all about drugs. The more jokes they can get, the better for them.
I get you.
You know what I mean? You have, in our days, you have in our days, it was drug dealers bringing rappers to perform at their shows. And then all of a sudden, the rappers turn into drug dealers. And now it's the fiends that are telling the kids what to do. How could a crackhead tell me what the fuck to do? Excuse my language.
No, this is off the cuff. Say whatever you want. This is off the cuff.
How is a Kurt Cobain heroin head telling me what to do?
Running, man.
You know what I mean? How's the guy sipping a cup of opium telling me what to do? How are you influencing my life?
Look, but you know what? We went from a paradigm of what was drug dealer music in terms of that real hustling aesthetic. We went through the real stories of what Schoolie D, Ice-T, N.W.A., now we got drug users who basically, and you know, everybody was talking about Future, you know, with some of the stuff, and I'm like, Future don't even do drugs, but yet it's still, he rap about it, and it's like, everybody's like, I'm like, look, you know, when we look at it, and we all come from the block at certain levels, some lived it realer than others, but we all saw stuff, and one thing about it is, what you two said was so real because there was always conflicts in hip hop. That's just going to be an occupational hazard because it's a street culture.
Yeah.
But when you look at a lot of things that were going on, when we look about what happened with DJ Scott LaRock, when he got caught in some, when we look later with Big L, you know, when we look at so many. Yeah, Freaky Todd. When you look at these situations, please give me your input on this. I think that's why when we looked at it from the 80s at certain levels, the music was not as hyper, was not necessarily based on a lot of real, I'm going to do shit to you in terms of like, I'm going to fuck you up when I see you on the street, I'm going to blast you. It was more lyrical. But also, too, I think individuals understood that when you're dealing with it from a street level, certain things, especially back then, if you said something to somebody or about somebody, it was going to be a problem. And that's why they never wanted to go there in the first place.
Not to mention those guys, too, they also felt like they already did what they had to do in the streets. They already got their respect on the street level. They wanted to prove themselves to on the mic, whereas you got it back with the day. Like these guys now want to prove that they're the baddest of the baddest in the street level, but yet they ain't got the talent to match up with it.
That's right. That's what I tell you. That's why we made that song Weekend Thug. It's for them dudes saying, you know what I mean, you hard in the club on the weekend, but Monday through Friday, where you at? I ain't seen you on the street. I ain't seen you out here. You say you claim in this corner, but we come to that corner all the time, but that corner is like, ain't nobody there except for the payphone and the pigeons. We ain't see nobody out there. You talking about ops and this and that. Like, these kids got to realize, man, this street life is not to be glorified. I've lost too many friends to prison, to caskets. You know what I mean? Like, these guys don't know what it is to be really involved in this street life. You know what I mean?
They think it's a stripe, but they know somebody got killed.
You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
Until somebody dies in their arms or, you know what I mean? Like these guys don't know. Like, you know what I mean? That's why we don't glorify the street life. You know what I mean?
It's more of a streetality rap.
More of a streetality rap. You know what I mean? We're just telling you our perspective from where we came from. Because if someone is asking me what's our music about, it's about street scholars who have graduated to becoming businessmen and proprietors right now. That's what we are.
Yeah.
I'm not going to rap about being on the block anymore because I'm not on the block anymore. I'm going to talk about signing contracts and getting your first house and owning some property. You know what I mean? And talking about escrow and building a portfolio. These are the things I'm talking about. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I know where I came from, how I got the money to get where I'm at right now. And I will never, ever, ever, ever just a man who works a 9-to-5. Never. I respect a man who wakes up every morning and goes to work for his time.
Like when Tupac's doing somebody's joint, you know, Tupac's always refers to the regular person in a lot of his songs. You know, he shows a lot of humility with that prior to having all that beef with Biggie and all that. When that beef was mainly just boots up by Suge Knight and his foolishness anyway. We all know that too. He was trying to bully the game. And if they would have bullied the game, if he just shut up and let his artists keep winning. Because Death Row was winning.
Death Row was winning more than anybody when you had Pop,
yeah,
Snoop and all of them on the label.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Big was just holding up Bad Boy. But now you see after Biggie died how long the Bad Boy artists actually do anything. Puffy might rape them for a year, and then they disappear. Next thing you know, 5 years down the line, we're hearing them on the radio complaining that they want their royalties. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, Death Row artists never really cried about royalties. Shrew just made sure he sweetened the pot for them. He wasn't a dumb dude. But he let all that stuff and the hype get to him. When he was at the Source, and he was dissing Puff at the Source Awards, the thing that if you don't want a guy that's in your videos, dancing around, talking about records, Ray, and all that. But he turned around being, he's trying to run a label, and he's acting like a fucking bouncer. Running around fighting. That's why he's getting his ass kicked now, because guys realize, hey, why am I afraid of you? All the beans been spilt about what was around him and all this other stuff. I ain't trying to kick him while he's down, you know? But at the same time, these are the things that happen. Tupac, if Suge just left everything alone, Death Row would have been still winning to this day. Money would have been a part of the issue at the end of the day because, you know, us black people always like to fight over that shit. Like, we can't see one guy winning for too much and we just get upset. They fought that dude over there, man. How come he's getting more money than me? Well, maybe he's putting in more work than you, dummy.
You know,
he's more appealing to the crowd.
And we got to break this down from so many different levels, revisiting some of what you said, because you all said so much in that. You know, let's break it back and down, because we're gonna go through all of this bit by bit, because you two made such outstanding points. When we look at it with Pop, where, of course, once again, Jay Hood said, you know, Pop is his most favorite artist of all time in terms of just the way he covered all scales of the human existence in terms of his emotive delivery, the subject matter, how you just related to him on such a visceral level in such a passionate and poignant fashion. Pac was, I think,
yeah,
why Pac's popularity still resonates today is because we saw so much of ourselves in him. Just like DMX,
yep,
would come later after him, we saw,
yep,
so much with X, which is why we identified, because we saw the internal struggles they had. What Pop brought to the table in terms of the music, for those that, and I'm not talking about these new Jack fans who only know him for Dear Mama or California Love. No, I'm talking about the Brenda's Got a Baby,
yeah,
Pop. Exactly. I'm
when
talking
my homie
about
calls.
The trap
when
Pop.
My homie,
yes,
calls,
exactly.
When that was one of my biggest songs of Pop.
Let's just get it. Like, if you're going to go like that, how about Trap?
Oh, man.
Dude,
you know,
I mean,
a lot of people don't even know those songs.
Boy, when I first saw that video in 1991, I was like, I mean, the video is still.
What's my homie called?
When you.
Yeah, that's
91. No, Trap. Yeah, but when I first
trap,
saw Trap,
yeah,
I was,
okay,
like, wow. I mean, that video just captures the essence of the Oakland streets. In terms of just, it just had, and I want to get to this too in terms of asking you about how the videos are shot nowadays as opposed to how they were back then, because damn, we still got a little bit under an hour left, but we still got so much to get to, but we're going to get to that as well. But when you look at Pop,
right,
he just has so much that we still love today. And when you think about, because me and King, I'm 43, King's 37. So this is the era we grew up in terms of really seeing this whole Death Row from the very beginning, from the rise
so
to the fall.
Don't worry, we are in the same era.
Okay, perfect. So we can
all
have
the same age bracket.
All there.
Yeah, oh, great. So y'all really understand it, just like we do. And we all came up in,
yeah,
that era being older now where we see Death Row, because, I mean, me and King talk about this on the air, off the air all the time about, and, you know, King has some, you know, we know people from there. You know, shout out to Cocaine,
okay,
Big Touch from Above the Law. You know, we know people that,
well,
came,
yes,
off of that,
yes,
tree.
Above
the
Law.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like,
right,
the stories that we heard were just crazy in terms. Shout out to RBX, too. You know, it's like, you know,
well, yeah,
I mean,
man,
the stories. Yeah, it's like, and, you know, with Suge, he did so much. in terms of helping out, but it's also too, I think, in terms of where he ended up going. Because like you said, when he really realized the power that he had there, I think he started liking it a bit too much. Because when you run the block like he did, you know,
when you become the king of the jungle, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you're gonna smell yourself a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, and at that time, there was no label selling more records than Death Row.
Right.
You had multi platinum artists on Death Row. You had Dr. Dre, The Chronic. You had Snoop Dogg. You had Snoop Dogg, Murder Was the Case. You had
Above the Rim soundtrack.
You know what I'm saying? You also
can't forget they got Jodeci.
They got Jodeci too.
Yeah.
I remember.
Right? Did you guys even know Tina Maria from Fire Desire, Rick James, she was signed to Cash Money.
It's okay, it's all good. Yeah, but I mean, but when you think about that era though, when you look at it with the East Coast and West Coast at that time, because we know them for the drama that was going on between Bad Boy and Death Row, but we got to think about the music that came out in that era. I mean, of course,
West Coast was winning all day. I was just talking to SK about that Murder Was the Case album, Calvin Broda's album. Oh, my God. I was just telling him that had some crazy bangers on that song. Like crazy.
I knew Snoop was no joke when I heard that Deep Cover joint.
Yeah, Deep Cover.
No, yeah. It was here in the state. 187. When I heard that joint, I was like, yo, who's this dude?
Yo, from when I heard Sam Snead on that Murder Was the Case album, I was like, yo, Sam Snead is
recognized.
He was the tightest. He had the East Coast flow with the West Coast swag. He was the sickest on the whole album.
You got to remember Corruption in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
Corrupt's a pit bull on that mic, man.
We can't forget Rage.
Oh, Lady of Rage. She's so underrated.
She's a bully with that, though.
She's so underrated, man. I'm telling you, man. All them girls were afraid of Rage, man. All of them were afraid of Rage.
And then the only one, I only think that would be afraid of Rage would be Latifah, though, man.
Facts. I'd like to see Rage and Rob Digger go from bar to bar, though. That would be a good battle.
Yeah.
Lady of Rage and Raw Digger, because they kind of got that same, you know, same kind of voice power, same kind of like bars, you know what I mean? I'm grabbing your mind, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, that would be a great battle, a great versus. Lady of Rage versus Rage and Raw Digger. Holy. You got to holler at
you.
It's a beautiful thing, you know what I mean, that we've been able to see so much different genres and the way that hip hop has developed, and actually changed, you know, because it's in a good space financially for enough for these guys, but there's a lot of guys who that serve robots, you know, like you watch some YouTube and see some guys' views and they got like 150K and they got like 30 comments.
A lot of people buying views, so it doesn't seem like.
But that's where the music's been messed up now.
I'm just
able to do that stuff. You know what I mean?
Like,
it's not
like,
real.
You have like 46,000 IG followers, and then when you go to see how many likes that person has, they have like 100 likes. So something don't really match up. You know what I mean? Things don't. That's just what I don't like about this new digital age. Like, cause like, you know, before when you had to go buy records, you know, you'll get a number. You'll know how many records are bought. Like, you know what I mean? Now with the streaming and then album purchases and then downloads and all this and that, you know what I mean? It gets a little bit confusing. And a lot of people, they boost their numbers to say that they sold this much, but they really actually haven't. You know what I mean? Like, I personally feel hard work is where everything works out. And I just don't like when people scam their way to being noticed. You know what I mean? And that's how I feel about a lot of artists right now, that they're scamming their way to get noticed. They're using propaganda. They're using, you know, clout. They're chasing clout to get to the top. They're doing all type of foolishness. And by the time you actually hear them rhyme or sing, it's garbage because now you're paying attention to so much of their clout and their drama bullshit that the music is irrelevant. You know this person's life like you lived next door to them. That's not how it's supposed to be, man. You're supposed to know me through my music, not through my actions. You know what I mean? But these people, they want to be on IG. They want to be on Twitter exposing their lives and this and that. And then when they get called out on their life, all of a sudden they're mad at the world. But you life out there. You know?
One of the main problems, too, with streaming is it manipulates the numbers. Even, like, they count in YouTube.
What happens, we got to find some people that will just play into that and learn about legacy, you know? And just understand,
you know, two words that are thrown around out here too much, and people really need to know the meaning of, is loyalty and trust. You know what I mean? And respect. These people use these words all the time, but they don't know the meaning of it. You know what I mean? They don't know how to respect themselves. They don't know how to be loyal to their brother. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's weird out here for me. You know, like, that's why we just continue with the hustler's mentality, and we just go through it the way we've been doing it. Like, you know what I mean? And honestly, it's been working for us. You know, we're very, how could I say, like, we're just in tune to our business. We're in tune with hip-hop. You know what I mean? Like, it's a heartbeat. You know what I mean? We're in rhythm with it. And, like, the knowledge of self and knowledge of hip-hop will make us shine more than other artists because we know a lot more. You know what I mean?
You know what it is, though? You got to appreciate the art of the music, you know? It's not just a hustle. Enough of these kids are asked to deal with music like they're on the corner selling dope. You know? Usually, how long is a dope dealer going to last? You know what I'm saying? They ain't going to last long. Either dead or in prison. That's the line, right? But
right. These
cats in the music industry, they have that kind of mentality. So they're about now, you know? So they're going to give you the music that's hot right now. Like I was playing to my son the other day, I go, the music you guys listen to right now, these guys are taking this music industry as hustling. So they're not worried about longevity and that. 20 years down the line, they're not going to be performing because they'll be so embarrassed about calling when they were young, calling everybody old. Now they old. So for them to go out there now, they're going to be like, I can't do this. So that's why they're dropping this music right now, because now music. What we're doing is supposed to be timeless, you know what I mean?
Timeless, man.
You know, when you're going to make a hit record, you don't plan to make a hit record. It turns into a hit. You know, like, you can market that, and you know it's going to be a hit record. That's why I said when we did Weekend Thug, I said to Stoss right off the bat, after we just did a free prod, I was like, yo, this is it. When this comes out, it's going to be on a different level towards our other tracks, right? But we got two other tracks that are out right now, COVID 2.0, and Putting That Work. They're on all digital platforms. You can download it, stream it. You can buy it from SupremeJeans.bandcamp, SupremeJeansRecords.bandcamp.com. We got some joints out there.
Our album should be dropping in October.
We don't have a name yet.
It's untitled right now, but it's solely produced by DJ Merciless. You're going to have features from Kid Smooth. You have features from Lord Fury, Aeson Eastwood, Illa. Tech from Smith & Wesson. So it's going to be a full body album. You know what I mean? It's going to be really nice. And, you know, we look forward to dropping you guys the next single in the next couple of weeks.
And it'll be called, the next single is coming out, it's called Call It Out Your Name.
You know, the work you guys have put in is just unbelievable. And also, too, we got to shout out Canada again, because we can't forget the great Marco Polo. We can't forget him either. You know, we got to shout out Marco Polo.
You guys, you're doing your research. You guys are real hip hop heads. Love that. Bless to you guys.
Yeah, of course. And
that
we can't forget that album. Look, we can't forget the album
respect,
we did with Mass Ace, the Brooklyn Story. You know, Brooklyn Story. You know, one thing about it is that you all, in terms of what you said, the jewels you are worth more than any treasure trove that we could find below the sea, but it's up here for everybody to see. What you all said about, because we want to touch more on that in terms of, you know, the popularity factor in terms of social media, because, you know, like King was saying, you know, a lot of these artists, you know, we see so many that claim that they're so hot, but it's like, you know, you all actually put in the work in terms of building your fans one by one as opposed to the microwave media mentality of just trying to get a quick,
exactly,
you know, a quick dish, you know, to serve.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
And I guess I'm going to throw in a little bit, too, here in terms of and this is not meant to shade them when I speak on it, but when we look at a situation with the rap, with the Versus battle with Soulja Boy and Bow Wow coming up, I mean, is this something that really we can actually say that these two really have songs that define? It's going to be for nostalgia purposes. It'll be great for certain people, but are we really going to look at this
it's
as a Versus?
It's 07 Starter Kit.
I would say for that that would be a great Versus for my son and my daughter. Like, honestly,
right,
that's not a Versus for me. That's a kid's Versus.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, because in 2000, when Bow Wow and all, and Soulja Boy and all them boys was coming, them young kids was coming out, come on, we was done grown men them time there. I wasn't doing the Soulja Boy. Woo, I wasn't doing that stupidness.
You know what they're gonna probably do? You know what they're gonna probably do? They're gonna probably bring back MySpace for that one night.
Oh, I think they would.
Well,
like I said, for me, that whole battle to me is a garbage battle. You know what? You know what would be a dope battle? I was like, yo, why don't you get Smokey Robinson versus, what's that huge name? Oh, my God. I said it to him the other night, man. Smokey Robinson versus
Charlie Wilson?
Yes. You know what I mean? Because you got the Gap Band. You got Smokey coming down from the Motown days.
And then they
got
Charlie
they
Wilson
in between.
And they could hit it off at the end because they got a collab.
They got joint. Anyways, but that's just me. You know, because we love soul music, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I can match up all people all the time. But that verse between Bow Wow and Soulja Boy,
I didn't even watch Eve versus Trina.
That's not for heads, man. That's not for real hip-hop. I mean, it's for hip-hop heads. It's for younger kids, though. It's not for our generation. You know what I mean? That has nothing to do with our generation.
But
yeah,
to build off
things
of that
opening
too,
up now, I think it's kind of like losing its luster a little bit. So he's just probably just throwing names out there because a lot of the big dogs, they're not going to really do it because they figure.
Nah, they want to get back to stadium work, right?
Exactly. It was
but
cool
to know
for the
Live Nation about to open back up. You know, the machines are firing back up. All the industry machines are firing back up right now. So these boys ain't going to be doing no Versus no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to get back on tour.
But they could, you know, it's crazy. They could actually
have a Versus tour. You know what I'm saying? That's what they should be setting up, a Versus.
They probably
tour.
Are doing that, man.
You know what I mean?
You all need to copyright.
City, different artists.
Y'all need to copyright that idea. You both need to copyright that idea. Copyright that. A Versus tour. You need to copyright that.
You know what I mean?
Ladies and gentlemen on Off the Cuff Radio, Usual Suspects from Canada said it first. You all need to copyright that idea for a Versus tour. If nothing else, just the name. You need to copyright that
name. Yes, sir. Yes, sir,
Before I forget,
the vultures would do, like everything else, they're going to squeeze the creativity out. Now, we were probably going to have Hologram versus Nick's.
Biggie versus Tupac. That's going to be the first. Biggie versus Tupac.
And they'll make sure they play Hit Him Up on that one.
But you know one thing about
a rock and roll versus, like, Jim Morrison versus, like, John Lennon. Like, shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It would be crazy, man. But like you said, we had to copyright those ideas.
I know. Giving away too much right now.
No matter where you're on radio, social media, something, there's always that ear listening to such an idea.
But, you know, one thing about it, and I wanted to get to this, too, before we missed out on it, because what you said is so important because, you know, music is about, I will never forget this interview Fonte did years ago where he talked about you want to make music in your 20s that you don't feel embarrassed to listening in your 30s. Because, like you said, And we've never had anybody on our show put it like that, where you said a lot of these young rappers trying to joke about old rappers, but then they forget one day they're going to be old and the music is not as great as the legends that came before them. You know, it's about legacy. It's about timelessness. It's about putting in the work that makes you legendary, because you know the history that you put into it, that you want to be an asset as opposed to being a liability. And I don't think a lot of these young artists, not all, but a lot of them don't understand that when you look at it, when you're looking at the albums that came out in our era, these are albums 35 years later that still hold up. 30 years later, they still hold up. 25 years later, they still hold up. You know?
Yeah.
And,
lyricism,
you know, it's
relevant. Relevance and lyricism is what makes that those albums timeless. Because
yeah,
no matter what, there's always going to be somebody in that struggle. There's always going to be somebody in that predicament. This is what made Tupac a genius. He made music for the common man.
Yes.
Not for,
yes.
He made music worldwide. He put himself in everybody's shoes first, but yet he was wearing his own shoes, but he made it seem like I'm talking to you directly. You feel me, King? That's how Tupac made it feel. Biggie took you on a ride. That's why people say who's better out of Biggie and Tupac. I can't say, because apples and oranges don't taste the same.
Mm. And they don't, and I mean, and the thing, and it's about what your preference is.
But they don't taste the same. So I can't compare an apple to an orange.
Well, you can't compare apple to orange, not even by taste, by appearance alone.
Exactly. Right? But they're both fruit.
Yeah.
We can agree on that, right? When it comes to Biggie and Pac, a lot of people are like, oh, Pac is bigger than him. No, no. It's two different rhyme styles. It's two different ways of talking the same story. Pac put it to, of him coming from a regular man's perspective. Biggie brought it from a dude from on the corner. You know what I mean?
Bed style,
huh? A dude from the corner who's trying to get his way out of the corner. You feel me? Pac put it as, I'm in the hood, but we all in the hood. And you know my story, so I'm going to tell you about the Kool-Aid and the icicles and all them things like that. And Pop, you know what I mean? You can't say that one's better than the other. Because, honestly, when Pop died, I felt it more than when Biggie died. When Biggie died, they said the flow died. But when Pop died, I felt like a piece of me left. You feel me? Because you felt more connected to Pop. But with Big, it was the flow. It was the D-boy swag. You know what I mean? It was like, I'm on the corner. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get off the corner. You know what I mean? But I'm trying to get them Versace shades at the same time, though. You feel me?
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing about it, guys, when we look at that era of it, because Pac, you know, and I'm even though Pac is not my favorite rapper of all time, Kool G Rap is, I've always respected.
Hold on, I just dropped my headphones. Yeah. Bang, bang, bang. Kool G Rap,
yeah,
one of the most
Kool G
Rap's
underestimated my favorite
rappers in the whole rap history.
He's my. I've been saying this for years. King will tell you this. Kool G is my favorite MC of all time, hands down. He's my favorite MC ever.
When I heard Poison for the first time off of Kool G Rap and DJ Polo's album, and when I heard Poison for the first time, I said to myself, "Oh my God, this guy's the Messiah. This dude's up to this day still got dudes from the Clan. You got dudes from D Block. You got dudes." Everywhere, still respect this guy's penmanship. Kool G Rap is a god.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's really, and I was always a Kool G fan, because I got to get back to the Pac comparisons in a minute in terms of just, you know, overall, but we got to give Nathaniel Thomas Wilson his real name, his flowers, because Kool G is just ridiculous with it. I mean, you know, but when you think about it, when Kool G really, when he went into, you know, when you listen to his the first three albums he did with Polo, from Road to the Riches to Live and Let Die, Live and Let Die to me is the defining moment of what we would call the mafioso rap style.
Oh, yeah,
this would predate. Now, you could say Wu-Tang in terms
of
when Ray Kwan.
Sauce Money.
Go ahead.
Sauce Money had that vibe, though, too. If you listen to Sauce Money, you can hear a little bit of Kool G Rap in Sauce Money flow.
Yeah.
That's true. But
true.
I mean, you
and
know,
that's the only person in this rap game that I will even put Coogee Rap name together with. Sauce Money had a Coogee Rap flow. He had a Coogee Rap cadence about him. You know what I mean?
He
like,
had a cadence.
Honestly.
And I'm a Sauce fan, but Coogee would just say something. I mean, this is the opening verse from Go For Your Guns. Niggas in the street that I dislike. You better get this right. These days, what the fuck is a fist fight? Picture me putting niggas in headlocks when I can lick off shots and put their ass in a box. Because if you step into me trying to throw a right hook, you're just looking to get your motherfucking life took. Because I can't wait to be a nigga state. So while you lift weights, I'm lifting light-ass nickel plates. So if you want to misbehave, nigga, I'm going to have to kick it to the motherfucking grave digger. Yeah, motherfucker, you heard it. Doing all that rope-a-dope shit. Nope, you dopey-ass murder. Niggas be the karate kid. But I be in prison doing a motherfucking body beard. So you can take all of that Rocky shit home. Sylvester Stallone ain't shit against Al Capone. Because I ain't got no patience or energy for motherfuckers and punk-ass suckers that want to injure me. Step up and play me like a soft bitch. I don't knock motherfuckers out of my motherfuckers off. Leaving the scene like Machine Gun Kelly. Two to the head, about four across the belly. Said he never gave it as a run. Fucking clowns, put your fist down and go for your guns. I'm like, ooh.
Bam,
I mean,
bam, bam,
that,
bam, bam, bam.
I mean, and
on,
the dude
gotta,
is
that,
just...
We gotta send these guys...
Hold on, man. Let's take a pause and give Coogee Rap his flowers right now, man. Let's take a pause for that, man.
Yes, sir.
Yo, I'm giving Coogee Rap his flowers right now. Let me tell you something. Homie, you just brought me back to 88, 87, 86. I'm telling you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Hip-hop still lives, man. Hip-hop still lives, man.
Hey, man, those bars could still spit right
those
now.
Those bars could still go on right now. You feel what I'm saying? I was just telling my man.
I mean,
I can hear, when you brought me just now, all I can hear is this man's bliss behind the words. I'm like, holy God.
And you know, when we get back to it with Pop, you know, Pop just had a presence, you know, and that's kind of what bothered me with his death to a degree. Because in terms of how all these new stands came out, and I'm like, y'all only really know, if we really get technical, I'm like, y'all really know
y'all
how
like
all these from...
They only jumped on because
exactly.
They jumped on when the Raiders his popped off. That's where they really jumped on.
In their mind, he's
but that greatest,
still a rapist. That, you know what I'm saying? Pop with that girl, Ray Tay-Tay. Like, come on, man. Y'all didn't like Pop, man. You didn't like Pop till he died, man. You know what I mean? It's like Big said, man.
They
ain't nobody till somebody kills you, man.
Yeah, as soon as the mainstream picked up on it, that's where they really hopped the wave, and they were like, oh, yeah. What's crazy? Y'all remember back in those days where you had
that actually got him his mainstream, though.
Y'all remember when I had chat rooms? Y'all remember back then when they had
the
chat rooms where everybody
days,
called himself Bad Boy Killer and all that stuff?
Chat rooms, guy. Holy. That's when you said the dial-up internet.
Oh, Lord, he took it back to the dial-up, American
dial-up
line and all that.
Holy.
Dudes used to have a name called Machiavelli Bad Boy Killer.
Oh, yeah.
And they were
that Machiavelli album was sick, though, man.
Yeah, man, still one of the best
that,
albums.
That was fire, man.
That's one of the greatest albums
album.
Ever.
Something different, man. Yeah, man, I love that album, man. Something different, man. That album was way better than All Eyes on Me.
Oh, yeah. That was a
yeah,
cause
that was really him. Yeah. That was really him, like, you know, putting the music that he felt that he wanted to put from his heart and soul.
That was his last album.
I could tell when he did All Eyes on Me. He did that to, he was happy. Like, he was in a happy space to come home. He wanted to celebrate, but now he wanted to get to the meat and potatoes.
He wanted to get
real serious with what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we look at it, y'all, and when you think about how the media, because what you said is so poignant, because, you know, of course, you know, with that, you know, because when he went to, you know, prison for sexual assault, you know, because we got to be careful to keep all the facts straight, because it was never rape, you know, but not saying y'all said it.
My bad.
Saying. And it's okay. Yeah, and it's okay, because the thing is, he went to prison for third-degree sexual assault, you know, but everybody tried to say, you know, and, of course, he was out on bail during that time. And it's like, but like y'all said, y'all absolutely right. Nobody was – and I think, you know, the tragedy of what was started happening, because people have – one thing that we all come from is before anything from the essence of the universe of the Lord God is that we're human. And that man went through a lot of shit. I mean, people really don't understand.
From
I mean,
from he was young.
I mean,
he's
a fan
and all that stuff. Not easy.
Yeah, he's born into the Panthers. I mean, they basically his whole life they were trying to kill his family, you know, and then he gets shot in 94 at Quad Studios, November 28th. I'm like, dude, this dude dealt with a lot in his life.
Oh,
you
yeah.
can see why,
oh, yeah.
you know, and then you go to prison. You know, and then they try to kill him in prison. We're saying this because we this is all documented that this happened. He said it that they tried to kill him in prison. You know, I mean, so you're dealing with somebody who internalized so much to where ultimately, you know, he's only a man, and it's unfair for somebody to have to deal with as much as he dealt with, and. To see it come out in his music, I think it resonated so much because, you know, at that time, of course, in the 90s, I would say
he
probably,
was a rarity. Yeah, I ain't
yeah.
mean to cut you off,
Tim,
but
man.
I was going to say to build
ahead,
off that
ahead.
He was a rarity because, you know, everybody was putting themselves as the toughest Don Dada. They were putting themselves as the biggest pimp, the biggest gangster, the toughest nigga. Tupac, he showed vulnerability in ways where even a lot of people, the squares, the square guy, the pushovers, the hardest guys, the women.
Oh, yeah.
They all gravitate.
Let's break it down to this. Right. Dear Mama record is the
There we go. Dear Mama. Dear Mama just puts it down to everybody. Everybody got a mama, right? Thugs got mamas. Killers got mamas. Racists got mamas. Everybody got a mama, right? And the man penned that song for his mother. Heartfelt that everybody can feel up to this day. You can still sing that song to your mama today, and she will still love you and kiss you, right?
A lot of artists, like, you know, they have those tracks, like they have it in them to do a solid track that shows their emotion in the rap, and it like it bears their soul on a record, you know. There's a few joints out there, like even right now. What's that joint I always love listening to is El Camino and Conway.
Yes. Hold up, man. It's called, hold up. This one's fire.
Was that joint Nina?
Yeah, no, no,
was
no.
It joint
was
Nina?
Called Forever Dropping Tears.
Yeah, Forever Dropping Tears.
That shit's fire, man.
You know what I mean? Like,
off of Conway's album.
When you hear those joints like that, like, so when you hear Dear Mama, you hear joints like Forever Dropping Tears and... You've got, like, all these artists, even, like, Meek Mill had one with Jadakiss, too. And, like, I think, like, a lot of these artists, they got to realize, you know, even the ones that are doing the trap music and the drill scene and all that, you've got to show some diversity because, honestly, if you come out with a whole heap of singles, you can have that single that gets ears that don't really jump on your genre of music. But you're showing people that you have the skill set to be able to do that, right? Like the trap scene and the drill for me, I could easily do that. That's like music you don't even think about doing. It's not a challenge to me. I find it's like hopscotch in the yard. You know what I mean? Because a lot of these guys, they don't really worry about their lyrical structure. They just worry about the repetitiveness to catch people's ears. They don't want to catch people's thing. So the difference between hip-hop in our era, going up through the golden era to now is, you ain't rewinding these guys' music. Like, you might get a Rick Ross, he might give you a couple of lines of stuff, and you're like, okay, let me catch this back. You know, now you got Griselda, you got Rock Marciano, you got guys like Karam out there. You know what I mean? Shout out to Mozzie, because I like Mozzie out there in L.A.
What you know about the
916?
What y'all know about the
916? Yeah, man.
Come on, man.
I told you, I grew up, me and my homies only listen to the West Coast, bro.
Man,
rest in
Mozzie,
peace, my homie
shout
Black,
out
bro.
To
we
Mozzie.
We were the only two that was the East Coast, man. Six of us.
Shout out.
Two dudes like the East Coast, four guys like the West, man. Shout out my homies, man.
Yo, before you guys even go on, man, I want to say a shout out to Max Bigavell. D. That's my dude, man. That's the waviest.
The wave guy.
That's the wave.
God.
That's the tsunami wave surfer. I want to say a shout out
wave
to Max B, man. Max B is the wave god, man.
We're in LA, so we got to shout out them cats in LA, man.
Yeah,
man. People know about you, you know?
Don't worry, man. You never know. We might get a join one of them hypey boys out there. You know what I mean? We love Oakland.
Yeah, you know.
That's the dude I
would
mind collaborating with out there, though.
I mean,
or
you know,
Clyde Carson. I like Clyde Carson too. He's smooth, man.
Oh man, you dropped a bomb right there because I ain't heard that name in a while. But Clyde, I mean, I remember when Clyde had his buzz going heavy, man. And it's like he was nice, you know, still is.
Yeah,
and
he's nice. He's cool. He's rapping. He's seeing his videos and shit. That dude looks like a cool dude, man.
Why you was quite easier?
Like Carson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man.
Shout
I mean,
out to all the Bay Area, man. The whole L.A., man. Everybody out there that's doing their thing, man. It's all good, man.
Yeah, you know, one thing about the Bay
Shout
Area.
Shout out to Black Hippies, too, because I like the Black Hippies, man. I like
Schoolboy
Q.
Absol, Kendrick, J-Rock, you know, Schoolboy.
Absol's dope, too, man. Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
I like Absol, too, man. Absol's dope, man. He slept on,
he
man.
He is so underappreciated.
He slept on
the
time, man,
ridiculous.
Up there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he slapped on though, man.
Yeah, man.
You know
I mean,
want,
you know one thing.
I want the hip hop where you used to pull up at the light and people used to lock their doors and wind up their windows. That's hip hop that I want.
He wants that snatch and grab.
That's what it is. It's some dead friends, man.
I want that shit where you would white people used to look at you and wind up their windows scared, guy. Can't wait for the lights to turn green.
He's like, we got that snatch and grab soundtrack going right now.
Yes, exactly. You give him that head nod. Huh?
But one thing about it is, how do we really try to get it back in the trap? Because hip hop has never left us. It's just about what was being pushed, I think. How do you feel about it in terms of how the videos are shot now, how it's marketed? Because back in the day, of course, you know, we had the Video Music Box, we had Yo MTV Raps, we had Rap City. You know, I think y'all had, matter of fact, in Canada, y'all had something called Much Music, didn't y'all?
That's right, yes, we had Much Music, yes.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
like so said about the politics now, you know, like, now, back then, it's harder to get your video on these channels, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because, like, if a set of people don't like you or the industry really ain't favoring you or you have touchy subjects, right,
mm-hmm.
they don't want to play you. Whereas now, you can play your shit on YouTube, you can get on Vivo. If you're good with Tidal, you can get on Tidal. Like, it's more accessible for you to put out a video and get it seen than it was back in the day, you know. Because in Canada, we didn't have BET, you know what I mean, to, like, in the 2000s. So I know my homie had a satellite dish, and he had BET, and he used to record.
Yeah, I think he beat BET like 2001 or so. Like,
yeah, and he started recording all the videos, and we'd be dubbing all the videotapes, man, and watching all the videos that we couldn't get because Much Music only plays certain stuff, you know? And this guy, his name's Oliver. He was on Much Music. He was the host of Rap City, and they told him, they don't want him to bring Biggie Smalls on, and they don't want him to bring Tupac. And he had a show. He brought both of them to Toronto. When Biggie came out Ready to Die, he had brought in Biggie. And Tupac was, I think, just before Biggie. And they didn't want
mm-hmm.
those guys. That's when Tupac was really wearing the Thug Life toques and all that stuff, you know? And they didn't want them guys there because, you know, their type of the way their music is.
Pretty much when hip hop comes to Canada, Toronto, or Montreal, it usually ends with gun violence. So that's why the promoters want to bring these artists, but they don't want to bring these artists because they know what comes along with the artist them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you can't blame the artists for stupid people.
Oh, it's just, you know what I mean? It comes along with it, right?
Music influences a lot of stuff, but come on, man. When you listen to music, you got to have some brain. You can't just listen to music and jump out your window, you know? But, like, with the videos, as I say, like, right now it's better. This is why all these young cats are making all this money and everything, because the videos are more accessible. You know, like, it would take, I doubt half these trap guys and all these little Dirks and all this stuff, we'd be seeing them if we still only had BET, Much Music,
yeah,
and
Hype Williams,
the Fox,
like,
and all these things.
You
know,
$1 million
for a good video. You used to be on TV like BET After Dark or something. So if you're a young cat, you wouldn't be able to watch BET After Dark. You know what I mean? You're supposed to be in your bed. So that's why we got, for us, we grew up in an era that the radio was how we really heard our favorite music. You know what I mean? Shout out to all the college networks that were playing records that would never get on mainstream. You know what I mean? So it's good that it's that way. The other way, when you weren't so accessible, it give you more drive to put out more quality music too. Whereas now you can put out any hocus pocus out there and you get a million views because you have a girl shaking her ass in it. That she wasn't allowed to do that on Much Music or MTV. Like, so the videos are way more creative then too than they were now because everybody's on their corner doing their video. But you had the storyboard majority of the videos back in the day compared to now.
And you all, and when you talk about the videos, we can't forget one of the best directors to do it, Little X, who's from Canada as well. You know, we can't forget him.
Yeah,
Toronto.
Word up. Yeah. You got a lot of talent out here in Canada, man. Especially from Toronto, especially from Montreal. We got a lot of talent out here. And like,
I think nationwide, though. Exactly.
Nationwide, man.
Got a talent.
Got a lot of talent.
A lot of hidden gems in Canada.
Definitely. So, I mean, in terms of it, as y'all keep moving, who else would you like to work with? Because you mentioned Griselda, and King will tell you, I'm a Griselda stan. I mean, those guys are just unbelievable.
No, they're beasts, man. They're beasts, man.
Well,
no, yeah, definitely, like, me personally, I would love to get, like, a feature from Max B, you know what I mean? Other than that, like, you know, me and SK, we're really a good unit, so... Like, we released, like, 2 mixtapes. We didn't have any features on the mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we actually had, like, 1 feature.
We had 1 feature, which was Ken Smooth.
And then, and Cassius D-Flow.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, we really bounce off of each other. It's usually, like, you know what I mean? Like, Merciless will be like, yo, you know, you guys should do a song with so-and-so, or maybe you should do this. Like, Merciless is usually, like, you know, the doctor behind the scenes putting everything together. You know what I mean? Like, engineering everything. But, like, overall, you know, I would definitely love to do a record with Max B. I like to do a record with Slick Rick just to pay homage. You know what I mean? But anybody else, I mean, it's all fair game. You know what I mean? I'm not like, saying, like, oh, I need to do a record with Nas or Jay-Z. I don't feel like Nas and Jay-Z fit me personally.
At the end of the day, those guys are more on their own thing, but other artists that, like, now I work with, like, at an old school joint, I wouldn't mind grabbing, like, a Master Ace, you know, because he got a hot joint right now with N.O.G., and that thing's fire.
It's fire, for real.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, I wouldn't mind working like that. Him, like, on the new cats, though, I like Kendrick, he's dope. I like Dave East. I think Dave East is dope, too.
Dave East is dope.
I wouldn't mind working with Styles P. I wouldn't mind getting a collab with Styles P. That would be hot. You know? Even,
very underrated.
I'm very, very underrated. You know? Who else? There's a lot.
Yeah.
I can't say right off the top, but, like, Styles P is one that I would really like to get I really like to work with him. And I would have liked to work with Five Dog, you know?
Yeah, you know, and one thing about it is that when we look at hip-hop, it's truly global because I think anytime you can get, because dope music is going to cover the continent no matter what in terms of what you have in terms of the talent you all can bring together. It's a cohesive nation under creativity, innovation, collaboration, and imagination. There's,
right.
you know, and the fact that, you know, this thing that we're all a part of, that we're all children, that has birthed, you know, groups like yourself, shows like us, shows that this is not a fad that everybody thought it was going to be. This is something that has persevered, it has endured, it is still influencing, and it is inspiring to this day. What does hip-hop mean to you personally, to you both personally, for what it represents?
For me personally, hip-hop means freedom. Freedom to express, freedom to show you who I am, and freedom not to be afraid to stand up and fight against the wrongdoings in life. So it's a way for me to get my voice out. So that's what hip-hop means to me, freedom.
You know, and I think also
for me, for me, hip hop. It's a way of life. You know, it's very inspiring. It's art. I love art. So I love the graffiti. I love the fashion. You know, I love the just the creativity of it. Hip hop's a thing that takes you to a good space. Whether you're upset or you're happy, you can still express it. It's great, man.
Yeah, you know, and for what you all in Canada have brought to us, we have to thank you on behalf of America for the gifts you have given us musically from hip-hop and other genres. I don't think you all get appreciated enough. You know, it goes beyond Drake because he's just popular. But I'm like, no, we got to look at the people beyond him in terms of who was laying the foundations before and just the culture, because you all, especially you too, are such awesome ambassadors for it. Also, I got to shout out my man Riley, you know, Wallace from Canada as well. You know, noted writer. He's got his book coming out. You know, from rap to, you know, from boom bap to trap, hip hop's greatest producers. I'm plugging his book too because I bought it. You know, all of you are so immersed in this. You know, you all from journalism to music to videography, you all have enriched the culture so much more, and we're all the more better for your contribution. We're all the more richer, we're all the more educated, we are all the more better as a collective and this nation of hip-hop because of you as well, and all over the world, man. Like I said, words can't express our gratitude for this show, for you, for the culture, for everybody that really represents it the right way.
I think they're trying to call back. It's called, the call got dropped.
Oh.
Yeah, they need to get back on right now.
Okay.
You guys on?
Y'all on?
No, we trying to get on now. We're on hold.
It's usual suspects, man. We got cut off.
We got cut off.
Yeah. Yeah, but like I was saying, for everything you all have contributed from Canada to us, man, from videography to art to journalism to, you know, you guys, you know, it's birthed, the culture's birthed, you has birthed us with this show, you with your talent and your music, you know, it's enriched all of us. We thank you for that. We thank you so much.
Well, thank you, bro.
Thank you, man. We appreciate being on this platform on your show.
It's been a great conversation, man.
Great conversation.
And you guys, I know we surprised you on our knowledge of the West Coast and some of the artists that I've talked to you about, and you've shown us that you've surprised us with how you guys have done your research and know about Canadian hip-hop.
And usual suspects.
So
thank
that's
you.
Crazy, man.
Yes, off the cuff radio, we're worldwide.
Yeah. I don't smile too often. You guys got me skinning my teeth.
Yeah, bro, because at the end of the day, man, it's like if you dope, we got to go, we got to follow up on who's dope and get the backstory behind it. Because we don't care if a person have, like, 5 million followers or 5 followers. If you dope to us, you getting aboard. You getting aboard rocking with us.
Respect.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing, and that's the vision that King had when he started Off the Cuff Radio, because in addition to this being the 401st show, we're also simultaneously celebrating, and we still got the big party show coming, but we're simultaneously celebrating 7 years of Off the Cuff, you know, in terms of what started 7 years ago. Yeah. I've been blessed to be with this for the past 4 years. I thank God every day that I have a chance to do this, especially with somebody I couldn't see myself doing a show with anybody else. This is, King is my bro, man. I couldn't do a show with anybody else but him. You know, that's what it is.
Yes,
you
sir.
Know,
appreciate it.
You know, as we come to a close, man, it goes without saying you all are welcome back anytime. You know, the door is always open.
All right, man. Well, we got the single calling out your name. Supposed to be dropping probably end of the month, early July. And as soon as that comes out, we'll for surely send that to you guys, man.
Yes, please do.
You guys are going to love it, man. We're causing trouble with this one, though.
Good. We need to ride music back. We need to
dangerous
soundtrack.
You're gonna love it, man. You're gonna love it, man. I don't know about the informers out there how they're gonna feel about it, you know, but hey, rats gotta get their feelings hurt sometimes too, man.
Right.
That's what it mildly. We just can't say what should happen to the rats, but
oh, come on, man. You already know. I'm just trying to be nice right now.
Right, the politically correct in it, all of it. But, yeah, man, but one thing about it is, keep being soldiers fighting a good fight for this culture. Keep making Canada proud. It's not only about your hood, it's about a nation, and you all rep your nation, you know, so right and so righteously, you know. It's just keep it gully, keep it gangster. Keep it true, keep it real, keep it gully, you know, and just keep it authentic more than anything, man. Once again, Usual Suspects, we thank you so much for your time, your friendship, your wisdom, your academia, your talent, and we support you all the way and always.
Respect, man. Mad love.
Respect, guys.
Much love.
It's been an amazing conversation, man.
Much love to us. Much love from y'all. Much love to you, man, from North Carolina to Virginia, world, from the United States all the way to Canada, man. We're going to keep this thing rocking.
Done, no.
Yeah. Definitely, man. Send a shout-out to Justin Trudeau as well, man. Shout-out to Trudeau.
Yeah, the only shout-out we give him is that he legalized marijuana. Other than that, man, he's out of pocket after time, too, man.
We need to open up the damn country so we can start getting our money, man. We in Canada prison right now, friend. Look, you hear that, Trudeau? They ready.
Man, every day we breaking the rules, man.
Definitely.
Crazy.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Before we go, man, we want to send a big shout-out to MJ for setting this whole thing up, man. She's one of the best.
Big shout-out to MJS. Big shout-out to MJ.
She's doing
amazing work, man.
Definitely.
Amazing work.
And for those that didn't know, Off the Cuff, we're worldwide, still doing it, going to continue to do it. We've been stamped in Canada by two of the realists, Usual Suspects, from us to us, U.S.
No, bang, bang. If you ain't off the cuff, you're going to get cuffed.
Let them know.
Very good, huh?
Let them know, man.
If you ain't on the cuff, you're on the cuff. You're going to get cuffed straight up and down. You better just know. Tune in. Plug in, don't plug out.
Definitely.
On
that note,
it's been a pleasure talking to you guys, man.
Definitely, pleasure back.
It's been a pleasure, and we're going to be sending you that next joint very soon. So look out for it, calling out your name.
Yes, sir.
Another DJ Merciless production. We're actually filming the video for that next weekend.
Okay.
So the video is going to be dropping probably same time as the actual single.
Definitely.
And look out
definitely.
For our
we'll
album
be on
in
lookout
October. Yeah, it's gonna be a good, it's gonna be a good summer, man. It's gonna be a good summer.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we got
the
joint for you guys before you get to the fall.
Definitely, definitely. Well, we're looking forward
we'll
to putting in a rotation.
Yeah. So we shout out everybody that's everybody that's listening, all listeners of the show. We're gonna shout them out. I know too many people, so it doesn't know. Big up everybody. You know, and shout out to you guys, man. Mad love, man. This has been amazing.
Yes, this
and
is,
you know
this
what?
Is
big
incredible.
Up the whole L.A., California.
Big up the Carolinas. Big up Virginia.
Virginia, Carolinas. Usual suspects. You done know.
West Coast, West Coast.
Your boy, Sean Ness, SK Bomber. You can check us out at Usual Suspects at Instagram. You can check us out. Check me out at Bond Vision SK on Instagram or That Guy Sos. You know, on Facebook, it's Usual Suspects. And, we here, man. We doing it up.
Definitely.
Right.
And on that note, we out.
Yeah, man. You don't know. Bless and love, and we'll talk again.
Yes, sir.
All right. Peace.
Peace.
Yeah.